And we're talking about the positive biological effects of something called pulse electromagnetic field therapy, brought to us by Nikola Tesla. And we're learning that that can reverse diseases and make you feel pretty darn good. Well, I find Rafael Siddiq does the same thing for me. Back in 1898, Nikola Tesla, actually 1893, my apologies, Nikola Tesla had demonstrated his invention of the radio, and he received a patent for it. But the patent office stripped him of the award in 1904 and gave it instead to, you guessed it, Marconi. And why? Well, there's a lot of evidence to suggest it's because both Thomas Edison and Andrew Carnegie had invested in Marconi, not in Tesla. Tesla fought for 29 years to reacquire his patent, finally getting a hearing in the U.S. Supreme Court with finding that 15 of Marconi's 16 patents were actually invented by Tesla himself. The court rules in Tesla's favor in 1944. Unfortunately, it came a year too late because it was a year after Tesla's death. Back with more of my conversation with Dr. William Pollack as we talk about the healing technologies of Nikola Tesla here on Coast to Coast. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Richard Serrett with you, and Dr. William Pollack is here discussing the remarkable healing technologies of Nikola Tesla. And we'll open the phones at the bottom of the hour. We'd love to hear from people who perhaps have taken advantage of this technology. Now, Dr. Pollack, let's just take a few moments and talk about Tesla Mania.
Well, this program in Toronto obviously recognizes Tesla and his birth. It's the anniversary of his birth, July 9th to 10th. And it's at the Ontario, the first day is at the Ontario Science Center. And then there are other activities planned. The fourth day basically is a visit to Niagara Falls, where Tesla designed the first generator to run electricity in the U.S. And so the whole thing is in recognition, the whole program, Tesla Mania, 4 days of it, is in recognition of Tesla's work and the benefits that we're all seeing from that work even today.
Now, it's strange that his technology, his healing technology, and it was understood that electromagnetic field therapy had, you know, tremendous benefit. And then all of a sudden, around 1910, as I understand it, this was all just sort of shut down. What happened?
Well, my sort of reading of it, or my assessment of it, was that there were hundreds of medical schools in the U.S., hundreds of schools, and not all of them were scientifically grounded. They were not, they didn't do a good job of training doctors. Back then, you could become a doctor in 1 year, and you could just, right out of high school, you could, not even finishing high school, you could get a degree. And a lot of people, and Carnegie was involved in this, very much involved in the middle of this, and they produced a report called the Flexner Report. So essentially, they started shutting down schools, and they set standards for what was good medical education. A lot of the people in some of these schools that were trained by these schools were using electrotherapeutic apparatuses. But there was, unfortunately, not good science behind them. And the people in the traditional medical schools, including one that I was at, Johns Hopkins, were basically, they're not doing any research in that area at all. And many of them shied away from it because they thought it was just so contaminated by people making extraordinarily and outrageous claims. That's where we got, you know, like snake oil idea, the snake oil salespeople. Well, a lot of that was electrotherapeutics as well. Unfortunately, you know, threw the baby out with the bathwater. They didn't particularly specifically shut it down. They just ignored it, essentially, the medical establishment of the time, which included the AMA and the colleges of medicine in the U.S. with Carnegie, basically shut all that down, and those schools went away, and the technology essentially became ignored. So now there, I know the AMA had to be involved after that, and that going after people who were using these kinds of technologies and devices, because in quotes they were not proven. So unfortunately, a lot of it went away. Homeopathy virtually died in the U.S. because of this, and osteopathy almost died, electrotherapeutics, and there were huge numbers of devices, and you could buy electrotherapeutic devices in the Sears catalog, you know, around the turn of the century, the 20th century. So unfortunately, we lost the legacy of a lot of opportunities to be able to heal people, and medicine really started to evolve towards the chemists began to get involved. So chemistry was an important part of this. Pharmacology, which is pharma, right, drugs, that began to have a huge influence in medical education. Surgery, of course, and the introduction of antibiotics and anesthesia. So that's how medicine began to evolve. And again, the technology basically went away. So there was suppression, but largely that suppression was because of the suppression of the people who were doing it, who were trained in poorly trained medical schools.
So it wasn't an overt attempt, let's say, by big pharma or orthodox medicine to suppress a technology that you know, might allow people essentially to heal themselves.
Correct. I was reading the Flexner report, actually, just rereading it in the last couple of days. And one of the there is a paragraph in that report that basically says the doctor will be trained in medicine, surgery, and midwifery, and get physics training and chemistry training and anatomy and physiology and pathology, all the sort of sub-sciences of medicine. And after all that training, if they wanted to add other things, including psychic therapy, i.e. psychology, psychotherapy, or they wanted to add physical modalities, that's okay. Electricity therapy was actually defined as an area that doctors could add to what they did. So it was not specifically rejected. I couldn't find anywhere else in the document that it specifically said, no to electrotherapeutics. But I think, in my mind, it was basically ignored because of the progress of medicine at the time, the direction it was going in. And if the professors, it's still true today, if the professors of medicine, the teachers of medicine, and the major industries that support the medical industrial complex, if you will, don't have an interest in it, they don't see the money in it, then it gets ignored. And the FDA, of course, can go after people who are using devices who are, in quotes, not proven. So you have to be extraordinarily careful about what you say you can do with it.
Well, let's fast forward to the 21st century. And I understand that Health Canada has begun to license pulse electromagnetic field frequency therapy. First, let's talk about what's going on in the United States. Where are you at in terms of the acceptance of this technology?
Well, Canada seems to be looser in its ability, in its interest in bringing the technologies into the market, if you will, to make it available to people. But you still have to be careful what you say. You can't make claims that it's going to cure cancer, for example, or heart disease, for that matter, et cetera. So you can make certain kinds of claims, or you have to prove that it has a specific claim. For example, I mentioned the bone healing devices. They can say they heal bone because they've spent the money and they've got the approvals to do that. In the U.S., it's much tighter because of the FDA again, and also the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, doesn't allow transport across state lines of devices. When you're making a claim, you have to prove it. It doesn't matter whether it's a soccer ball or another tool. Say, if you have an ACE bandage or a heat wrap that says it's going to cure your back problems, well, the FTC is going to say, show me the evidence. And if you can produce the evidence, they'll allow you to make that claim. But also the FDA, for health purposes, if you're saying it's going to stop your pain, or if it's going to improve heart disease, or cure cancer, or cure diabetes, well, then you have to prove it to the FDA. It takes a lot of money to do that. One of the companies, I actually spoke to the medical director of one of the companies that has a device for bone healing, and I asked them why they didn't use these devices for osteoporosis, which is a very common problem, and there's no good treatment for it. The medical treatments are terrible. They don't work that well, and they have tremendous side effects. So they wanted to go ahead and get an approval to use their devices, which now had a 20-year history in the U.S. for safety and effectiveness. But the FDA made them go back to what they called animal studies. The company figured out it was going to have to cost them $500 million, $500 million, to get a new indication for osteoporosis, if they could even get it, because, you know, sometimes the rules and the people who make these decisions can be somewhat arbitrary. So they decided not to pursue it. So we don't have an effective electromagnetic therapy. We know that it stimulates bone. We know. It does a very good job for bone. So that's kind of the environment here. Today, if you want to get a drug approved, if you want to submit an application to the FDA for a drug, you have to put down a check for $750,000. And the check has to clear before they will even open the application. So that's the bar.
The game is rigged.
Huh?
The game is rigged.
It's totally rigged. It is. I mean, whether it's rigged on purpose or not, it has de facto become that way.
That's just that's a tragedy of epic proportions, Dr. Pollack.
I think it is. I think it is, because this is a technology that has tremendous healing potential, and I see it all the time.
Now, you've been involved in acupuncture. Sort of do a contrast comparison for me between acupuncture versus pulsed electromagnetic frequency therapy.
Well, if you could bear with me for a second, let's go back to the question we asked just before the last break about homeopathy and these other technologies, lasers and ultrasound, et cetera.
Right,
all
right.
of them tend to do – they're electromagnetic in their own ways. And I have basically – resolved myself towards using magnetic therapies because I think they're essentially the most cost-effective. Every technology works. Laser works very well. Electrical stimulation works very well. Acupuncture works very well. So they all have their place. And it can work together with magnetic therapies. But if you're going to buy one device, then I would recommend magnetic field therapies. I'm always of the opinion, and this, I've been this way since I've been a family physician, I want people to be independent. I want people to treat themselves. I tell my patients regularly, I'm not your doctor, you're your doctor. I'm your consultant. I'm going to tell you what you need to do to be healthy as you want to be. And so then I recommend the technologies. Acupuncture is one of them. So if I say that I think that magnetic therapy is going to work for you, but your problem is going to go away in a few weeks with good treatment with acupuncture, fine. I recommend the acupuncture. Acupuncture is the placement of needles into the body, and there are many kinds of acupuncture. When you put a needle into the body, into an acupuncture point, you actually create a cascade of electrical events. And this has been pretty well proven. The acupuncture meridian system is a DC current system. It's electrical. And as an electrical system, it also has, like the right-hand rule we mentioned with transmission of electricity produces a magnetic field. Well, that system also produces a very tiny little magnetic field in the body that serves as a shield for the body, in a sense. But when you put a needle in a point, it causes a transmission of current down that line and then begins to rebalance tissues and begins to stimulate various healing processes. So that's very specific and very focused. Unfortunately, you have to go to an acupuncturist to get the treatment. With the magnetic field therapies, I discovered early on that they do some of the effects of acupuncture without a needle. And at the same time, they can actually stimulate the tissue itself directly. So a needle will only work in the spot of a needle, or you rely on the transmission of energy down the line. So that's kind of like the difference between magnetic fields and acupuncture. They can be used together, but PEMFs give you the additional advantage of being able to actually go into the body, deep into the body, all the way through the body, in fact, and stimulate the cells to heal themselves.
So where does one go and buy one of these devices? Is it sort of one size fits all, or are there different devices for different ailments?
Well, at this point, we're not evolved enough with the technologies to be able to say that, you know, there's only one device for this particular problem. The FDA, of course, has said that if you go to the FDA, you have to have an indication. So if you wanted to heal a non-union, you have to go to the FDA and get approval to say, I heal non-unions. So in that sense, there are devices that are specific for that. And once you do that with the FDA, you're locked in. So the FDA, we call it golden parachutes and golden handcuffs. You can make a lot of money by getting FDA approval for a specific indication because you can market for it and then sell it for it. But you're locked in. You can't do it for anything else. And so that means you have to have a room full, a building full of devices for all these different conditions if you go that route. We don't want to do that. So we have to try to find devices. And there are lots of commercial outlets for devices in the U.S. When I first started, there were almost none. And now we've got, to some extent, not really, I wouldn't say an explosion. It's not like there are hundreds of companies that sell magnetic field therapy devices, but there are lots. And so you can buy directly from a distributor. You can buy from somebody who is a salesperson for that particular company. Or the reason I set up drpollock.com is to be able to provide people with a range of devices that I've personally used, personally tested, and I use it on myself and my patients. And before I recommend it to anybody else, I want to be really comfortable with what it can do. And so drpollock.com not only educates people about magnetic field therapy, but also allows them the opportunity to get one if they want one.
And let's say someone has rheumatoid arthritis in their hands. I mean, how? Give me the do's and don'ts. I mean, how do you go in and you purchase one of these devices, you unwrap it, you've got it at home, you take it out of the box. Now what do you do with it? What are the do's and don'ts?
Well, sometimes the manuals work. The basic don'ts, sometimes the manuals work, sometimes you need some extra help. And again, this is one of the reasons that I set up the website I did, which is to provide a lot of education so that people have good support for what they're going to do. Sometimes it takes a discussion with a clinician or some kind of practitioner to educate you, you know, on your own specific use. It's most of the time it's hard to go wrong because these are very low intensity systems compared to MRI, for example. They're low frequency. So that means that they're really, the risk factor is almost non-existent. It doesn't mean it's not existent, but it's almost non-existent. So you have to be careful with pacemakers. We can't say that you can use it safely in pregnancy because there's no research to support that it actually is safe in pregnancy. Although we do know that, women get pregnant and work in MRI suites, you know, doing MRI testing while they're pregnant without any obvious problems. So, but we haven't done a formal study to look at, you know, the safety in pregnancy. So that's a sort of a relative contraindication. I would not, there's a lot of things that we say that you, for example, if you have an infection, it's probably not a good idea to rely totally on the magnetic field for your treatment. But if you get an antibiotic to help you with your infection, then you can use the magnetic therapy to help your body speed up the recovery. When you take an antibiotic, all it does is kills the bugs. The body has to finish the job of healing itself. But the antibiotic does not heal you. You have to heal you. But what you can do with the magnetic fields is expedite the healing process to make sure that the healing process doesn't stall or stop or break down. And you're less likely to get complications. The Eastern European surgeons discovered this a long time ago, the orthopedic doctors, that when they used pulse magnetic fields in their surgical patients, they recovered much faster. Their wounds healed in about half the time, and they didn't have complications. So it could be used along other approaches, and often should be used along other approaches in order to get the best results.
Do you have one of these devices in your home, and how do you use it?
Well, to go back to the rheumatoid arthritis. So it's actually very effective for rheumatoid arthritis, but it's not a cure for rheumatoid arthritis. It's an autoimmune disease, and you can't turn off the autoimmune process. And, you know, at this point, we don't have the technology to know how to turn it off. But we know that we can help your joints be more mobile, less swollen, be less inflamed, and have less pain in them using pulse magnetic field therapies. Now, do I have them in my office or my home?
Yeah, do you personally use one?
Oh, all day, every day. Yes, I use magnetic fields for all sorts of things. Well, I happen to have, you know, I'm getting on in years, not that I'm old, but obviously I have creaks and rattles. I tore my left lateral meniscus, my cartilage, my left knee. And it was a mild tear, and my knee clicked every time I walked, every time I stepped on it. And I used pulse magnetic field therapy 1 hour a day in a knee brace, battery-operated device, and 3 weeks it was gone, completely gone. I have sciatica, and when my sciatica acts up, I put my magnetic therapy on my back and gone within minutes. We have people who have fractures that heal much faster, bruises, bug bites, spider bites.
Gotcha.
Will heal
All
in
right.
minutes.
We'll take a time out, come back. More of my conversation with Dr. William Pollack and Tesla's healing technologies. Don't go away. Welcome back to Coast. Here's an indication of how far ahead of his time Nikola Tesla was. In 1898, the United States military showed no interest when Tesla demonstrated a remote-controlled boat. Again, 1898, remote-controlled boat. Even though Tesla's wireless device was the beginning of the technology that would later enable robotics. Now, the more you learn about Nikola Tesla, the more you can't help but be impressed with him, even his magnanimous nature. In order to keep electricity inexpensive to the public, Tesla sold George Westinghouse his own royalties, which were worth an estimated $12 million. He sold them for just $216,000. If Tesla had kept his royalties, he may have been the first billionaire, sharing financial history with the likes of John D. Rockefeller, the world's first in 1916, Howard Hughes and Bill Gates, who became the first to reach $100 billion in 1999. The life and times and visions of Nikola Tesla. When Coast to Coast continues, along with your phone calls, right after this. And we are back on Coast to Coast. My name is Richard Serrett, along with Dr. William Pollack, a national expert in the medical use of electromagnetics and energy medicine for more than 22 years. And much of that technology comes to us courtesy of one Nikola Tesla. Before we get to the calls and the lines are filling up, just give me a sense, Dr. Pollack, of where you would put Tesla sort of in the pantheon of the great thinkers and inventors of all time. Do we have William Pollack with us, or did we lose him? Ah, well, no, he's there. He was just pondering. He was pondering. All right.
Nikola Tesla is clearly, I mean, he's had such a huge impact. I mean, I could say, well, who's important? Is it Plato? Is it Einstein? I don't know. I don't know how much Einstein affects my life directly. Right, but Tesla.
That's an excellent point. An excellent point.
Right, so our lives are completely interwoven with what Tesla did for us.
And yet, tragically, he died penniless and alone.
And alone. And then after that, his estate was not able to benefit from his work because, you know, for some reason, the FBI took all his documents. I suppose they could have considered it national security.
And impossible to answer, I suppose, but I'll ask the question anyway. How much in terms of the healing technology, the pulsed electromagnetic field therapy, has been lost to us? How much of that was scooped up by the FBI at the New Yorker Hotel in 1943?
Absolutely correct. I agree with you totally. You know, not only what happened then and what also happened in 1910. So we had at least two aspects of the loss. Now, I think Tesla had a major impact on all these people around the turn of the 20th century who were doing electrical therapies. We still have some tools that are available today from that have existed from back then. TENS machines, for example, electrical stimulation, all continued throughout all these years. And electromagnetic therapy, unfortunately, is relatively recent since, I would say, in the last 25 years that we've started to have that technology available here in this country, where it was commonly available in Europe. When I was traveling in Europe this past summer with Bob Connolly, who's doing a movie called The Healing Field, we interviewed people in a lot of the places we stopped, and asked them if they had any experience or any understanding about pulse magnetic field therapies. And many of them said they did. In fact, one woman that we saw actually was using it to treat herself. So it's much more common and accepted there. It's been around there and hasn't been suppressed in the same way that it has here for a long time, for probably close to 100 years.
All right. We have a lot of people that are lining up and wanting to speak with you, Dr. Pollack. Are you ready to dive in?
I sure am.
Okay, let's go to a first-time caller line, and Alex is in Simi Valley, California. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning, Richard. Good morning, Dr. Pollack.
Good morning.
Fascinating program. Thank you very much for bringing it up. I had a question regarding Tesla's technology and how it related to the one that was invented by Royal Rife back in the early 1900s. Are you familiar with his work?
Royal Rife. Dr. Yes. Pollack, yeah. Are you familiar with his super powerful microscope?
Yes. The work that Royal Rife did was very important for us as well. And he did the job of an amazing microscope, being able to see organisms at a level that nobody had ever seen before. Since then, medicine has developed what we call the electron microscope, and again, huge financial interests were behind that, and that nobody ever took up the Rife microscope.
Actually, I wasn't.
That basically fell by the way, and he was vilified as well and ignored and suppressed. There's a lot of infighting and politics associated with this, and people, as he got better and better and smarter with what he was doing, invested interests began to go after him, and a lot of his work began to fall apart. That's unfortunately the nature of this, of this country, and actually a good part of the world, is the economic interests are more important than serving humanity.
Well, the claim
that's what happened to Rife.
The claim, Dr. Pollack, is sorry. I was just going to jump in if I could, Dr. Pollack, because it's a fascinating point that Alex brings up. And the claim was that Royal Rife had identified the resonant frequency of just about every known disease and pathogen known to man, and was able to essentially shatter those diseased cells. What do you make of those claims?
Well, go back to resonance. A lot of what he was doing was essentially using frequencies to treat various conditions. And he discovered this using his microscope, that he could kill organisms by blasting them with relatively high energy frequencies. And then each organism, like viruses or parasites or bacteria or fungi, would have a resonance pattern that would kill it. He was treating people with the Rife machine, and getting results with people as well. But it's very hard to prove in a person that when you're giving them a frequency, that what you are actually curing is what you did in a petri dish. So this is a part of the problem with what we see with Rife. But I think the fundamental concept or idea there is frequencies are important. The challenge then is finding the right device or the right system to be able to, or the right frequency for that matter, to be able to do the job. So we need to develop better, there is a library of frequencies and things that people have found over time to work for specific conditions. But unfortunately, a lot of it has not been subjected to rigorous systematic research to be sure that it does just that. However, I deal with conditions all the time, like Lyme disease, or viruses, like herpes viruses, which could potentially be affected by different frequencies. But we just haven't, that research had just not been done. It has not been funded.
Alex, did you have a supplementary?
No, that was pretty much it. It seemed to me that Dr. Rife's frequency generator actually did, where he, in his experimentation, did pick up the frequency for dozens of different diseases and ailments. And by hitting the person with that frequency, basically those cells would blow up, in a sense. So
they don't always need to blow up. Now, if you want to kill a virus, I guess you have to blow it up. Or if you want to kill a parasite, you may want to blow it up. But if you're trying to treat, and he also thought that cancer was a virus, that was caused by a virus. Well, at the time he was quite ridiculed for this, but now we know that there are many cancers that are in fact virally induced, that there are viruses that are part of the problem. But I don't think all cancers are. So So that's where we get into some problems, because I don't know how much he studied different kinds of cancers. And back then, we did not have the ability to differentiate cancers as well as we do today. So I think, yeah, I think you can still take a cancer cell, subject it to a resonance frequency, and help the body to kill the cancer.
Right? All
so
right,
what
let's
we're doing, like with antibiotics, we're not healing the infection. We're killing bugs. And the same thing with frequencies. We're giving the body a fighting chance. Most electromagnetic frequencies or most electromagnetic fields don't have the power to kill bugs. Now, Rife himself too had a different kind of apparatus than most of the apparatuses available today, and there was a lot of sort of infighting among people that he worked with and the manufacturers of his devices at the time. But he only made about 13 or 15 of the true Rife devices at the time, and he was constantly fiddling with them anyway. So we don't really know what could be capable, because we haven't been able to get access to the original Rife machine. Still, I know that, for example, with frequency-specific microcurrent, same thing applies, that you can use frequencies to treat different conditions. And people have expressed, you know, basically have built a library of their experience with different frequencies to treat different conditions in the body, and that's resonance-based. And sometimes you don't even need a whole lot of power to create a benefit. Homeopathy is essentially frequency-based as well, right? Except that you're using a known substance that has an effect that is, you know, is similar to the symptoms that the person has. That's what the definition of homeopathy is. So, yes, I think there's a huge area for continued development and experimentation with resonance therapies like the Rife frequencies.
East of the Rockies and Kay is in Ohio. Kay, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Dr. Pollack. I wanted to ask about the TVs. They tell you to set at least 10 feet away from a TV so you're not getting too much electric magnetic field, because it can cause cancer. Also, computers. And they got these devices you can put on computers and also on TVs that's supposed to help block some of that. You're already saying that, you know, not to watch TV too much and to sit so far away from it, because you can get cancer from the electromagnetic field.
Yeah, there
All
is
right, Dr. Pollack.
Certainly that question about what kinds of conditions or problems can happen. We talked about that earlier in the show, about the environmental magnetic fields that we're all being exposed to, the Wi-Fi, the microwaves, and so on. You know, our electricity actually coming into our homes is actually dirty. What we call dirty electricity, and you need to use special filters to clean up the electrical frequencies that come into our homes. So TVs themselves are basically powering and using the frequencies from the power lines. The old televisions, what we call the CRTs, cathode ray tubes, they were really bad in terms of that radiation. The new LCD displays tend to produce a lot less radiation. So I don't know whether cancer is caused by them or not, but I think it certainly can harm the body. And again, people can resonate with specific frequencies from the TV, particular frequencies they may be particularly sensitive to. And we do have people with electrical sensitivity who can be like antennas. Their bodies are like an antenna. They're picking up all these frequencies and they're resonating with them, but in a negative way, causing them a lot of symptoms. I think cancer can certainly be a problem. There's been lots of research done by all kinds of people all over the world, in fact, looking at whether power lines can cause cancers. And there's no good evidence to show that it causes cancers in general. There is some evidence, maybe, that it might cause brain cancer in children. And that association actually is also, you know, weak, and has not been, I think, conclusively proven. But I think that risk is there.
All right, let's go this time west of the Rockies, and we say good morning to Roger in San Francisco. Hey, Roger, how are you?
Hi, okay. I'm wondering if the doctor could just go back to some fundamentals for the benefit of the audience, who really probably has much less prior knowledge than he might expect, to explain the difference to people between sympathetic resonance and forced resonance, and then perhaps the curiousness of a pre-damped system that then gets forced. Those are three very different things, and they're fundamental to understand really what he's talking about. The difference between sympathetic and forced, if you would do.
Thanks, okay? Roger.
Well, I'm not an engineer or a physicist. So what I understand about resonance patterns is, let's use the example of throwing a rock in a pond. When you drop the rock in the pond, you see the waves go on around the rock. They spread out from the rock over, to the shore, if you will. Now, if you throw another rock in another part of the pond, then those waves can interfere with the first set of waves that you produced. So you can have what's called an interference pattern, and some people use technologies with resonance where they use what we call cancellation frequencies. They cancel or counteract the other frequency. So if you think that a cancer or an abnormal cell has a certain frequency, and you broadcast another frequency that basically counteracts that, possibly similar to what Rife was doing, then basically you can, eliminate that original resonance. On the other hand, what you can do is you can throw a rock in the pond, and then very soon after that, with proper timing, you can throw another rock in the pond, and the waves, the resonance caused, or the waves that are caused by that original rock being dropped in, actually amplify each other. In other words, they are sympathetic. They interact together and amplify. So there are enhancing resonances, and there are interfering resonances. I think it's what I try to do, more than trying to use something like Rife to destroy things or cause interfering resonance patterns, is to use amplifying resonance patterns. So we're trying to actually cause the body to be healthier and to heal itself. I want to rely on the wisdom of the body to do its job. If I'm trying to do interference patterns, unless I'm really precise and I really know what I'm doing, there's a risk for harm. But I think if you're doing, again, sympathetic resonance treatments, then you're more likely to have a benefit without harm, because then you're using the body's own natural capacity.
What about the role of music, Dr. Pollack? Because music is essentially, it's frequency, right? So is there any evidence to suggest that musical notes can heal?
Oh, sure. I mean, music is, after all, resonance too, isn't it? Except it's sound. So you can do music and put music into into a device and then take that frequency from the music, transduce it into an electrical current, and then that current pulses at the rate of the music, the resonance of the music. So you can use music itself, which is sound, which causes a different kind of signal recognition by the body. It's more like a pressure wave. Now, does music go into the body, all the way through the body, like a magnetic field can? I don't believe it does to any great extent. I think it can go into the body, but I'm not so sure that it goes all the way through. But sound itself is a pressure wave, which has a resonance and a frequency to it as well. The body will recognize it and will listen to it, will attend to it. And you can use music to make people alert, or you can use music to change people's moods, right? You can feel happy, you can feel sad, you can feel like you got to go marching, or you can, I'm not a fan of rap and heavy metal because it jangles my nerves.
I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that. I've seen pictures of water crystals that have been in close proximity to, different types of music. And you look at the structure of the water crystals when they've been sort of subjected to, say, classical music versus heavy metal. It's quite remarkable to see the contrast. More of my conversation with Dr. William Pollack and your calls as we continue to discuss the healing technologies of Nikola Tesla right here on Coast to Coast AM. My name is Richard Serrett. Stay with us.